The Tom Woods Show, episode 1699.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, there are a lot of people out there who will support you and will buy from you if you accept Bitcoin. But if you've ever wanted to accept payment in Bitcoin and were afraid that it would just be too complicated to figure out and set up, well, I have the solution. A free video series I've assembled that walks you through the process step by step and makes it really easy. Check it out at tomwoods.com/Bitcoin. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here, wrapping up the week with a solo episode, and I'm going to riff off a slide, I mentioned this yesterday, that appeared apparently in a presentation given in a high school in California, a public high school in California, sometime in this year, 2020. And if I have a good enough memory, I'll put the graphic of it on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/1699, so you can see it for yourself. And it's a graphic pitting the idea of being conservative against the idea of being liberal. So it's conservative versus liberal, and then they're going to go down 6 points to show the contrast between the two. Now, to some degree, you know, you could say we don't really have a dog in this hunt because we're really neither one of these as libertarians. But you can easily see the way they caricature conservatives is exactly the way in almost all these points they would caricature us. So the sort of person making a presentation like this is not making the kind of careful, nuanced distinction you would have to make to distinguish between us and conservatives. Okay, this we're not dealing with somebody who's looking to be super careful. We would be conservatives, according to them. So let me take a look and just show you what I'm talking about here. Remember, this is being taught in a school. It is so utterly cartoonish as to be laughable. So, for example, the very first point of divergence between conservative and liberal, according to this list, is under conservative, we find the words favor the wealthy. And then under liberal, favors common person. Now, presumably, this is for the kind of superficial reasons you might think that, well, the liberal favors all kinds of programs that the conservative is against, and so the conservative must just be against the most vulnerable people. But there are lots of reasons that you might be against certain programs that are supposed to help the least fortunate. In many cases, they make the situation worse. They encourage behaviors that are self-destructive in the short and long run. It does not help the common person to have a $15 minimum wage. That does not help. What helps is to make the person worth $15 an hour, but just saying we're just going to decree that it's $15 an hour causes all kinds of problems that we've discussed in previous episodes of the show. So in other words, just simply wishing for something and then using the violence of the state to enforce it, enforce that wish, doesn't necessarily yield the reality that you want. Because if I were to say nobody should have a job that doesn't have an hour's worth of massages every day plus a $100,000 salary, superficially that sounds like I'm favoring the common person. But what that actually means is that the common person just won't have a job. Not to mention, it was Rachel Maddow who went on the late night talk shows in 2008 defending the bank bailouts and just the bailout regime in general, saying that if without these bailouts, these were her words, we wouldn't have an economy. We wouldn't have an economy. That's favoring the common person, apparently, shoveling money to the wealthiest and most influential people in society, favoring the common person. So I don't go for that. So again, that's what they would say about libertarians. We favor the wealthy. We don't favor anybody. That's the point. We don't favor anybody. Remember the slogan of Andrew Jackson, who had his faults, and I'm not cheering for Andrew Jackson, but it's an interesting episode in American history, was equal rights. That was the slogan of Andrew Jackson, equal rights. But by equal rights, he did not mean what typically people mean today, which is special privileges for various people who are constituents of ours. No, what he meant by equal rights was that everybody could equally enjoy the life that they had, that you couldn't have the life that somebody else had. You couldn't have the property that somebody else had, but you had the equal right to enjoy your life, liberty, and property that you had. And that was the extent of what equal rights meant. It's that, in effect, you are equally entitled to nothing from anyone else. Nobody, you're not entitled to, I mean, how narcissistic would you have to be to think you're entitled to being given things by other people who have their own concerns and their own lives and their own families? Why are you as important as or more important than those people? You know, who would think of himself in that way? Does it favor the common person to have the value of the money get lower and lower each year? Now, a wealthy person can hedge against that, I think, much, much more effectively through investments and different things they can do to shelter their money from the effects of monetary inflation. Now, you may say monetary, you know, price inflation is fairly low right now and has been for a while. That's true. But the point is, even if it's 1 or 2% a year, you take that and you see that through 30 years, that's a major, major chunk of value taken away from your savings. So it means the average person can't get ahead. It can't accumulate for the future. The way you could, back when gold and silver circulated as money, they kept or increased their value over time. So you could simply accumulate gold and silver coins. That's all you needed to do. You cannot accumulate green pieces of paper, fiat paper dollars in the U.S. system, unless you want to be called a fool and watch it all evaporate in terms of the purchasing power it has. So that doesn't help the average person. It means the average person now has to somehow figure out how to get into the stock market or whatever, getting involved in financial instruments he knows nothing about. That's good for that person. That helps the common man. And we could just go on and on. I could talk about the war on drugs, and you'll say, oh, but that really was Nixon and Reagan. But come on. Democrats went along with that, and liberals, let's say, let's not bring party into this. Because it's true, by the way, that, yeah, if we're going to talk about Republicans versus Democrats, yeah, you can find some Republicans who favor subsidies and cronyism that do benefit the wealthy. Yeah, I can find that. But we're talking about it as philosophies, you know, conservative and liberal and people who associate with those labels. Let's leave the party system out of it, because that warps people's minds even further. But the point is, up until very recently, liberals were on board with the war on drugs as anyone, until very recently. And even in recent years, it's true that maybe they've become somewhat more reasonable. But you talk to the average, I find that talking to the average left, now not outright leftist, some of those people do get it, but the average liberal still kind of feels superior to the average person, and the average person left to his own devices will make stupid choices. And half these people in their private lives use drugs anyway. They just feel like that they can use it, but we can't trust these lowly people to make decisions about their lives because they're going to screw their lives up. I'm a sophisticated, successful businessman. You know, I can snort some coke from time to time and it's no real problem, but we can't let these lesser beings do it. So they're just walking hypocrites, half these people. So, and I don't believe that the war on drugs has on net exactly been a benefit to average people. Now, we could flesh that out if we needed to, but there are a lot of Tom Woods Show episodes about that. All right, I could go on this topic for a whole episode, but let's go on to the next one. Under conservatives, we read seeks to divide, and under or conservative seeks to divide, and then liberal seeks to unite. Now, that's just, again, that's showing you're not even trying to understand the other side. So you actually think it's their goal to divide people. So first you think they just want wealthy people to succeed or to be benefited, which already sounds like a caricature. I mean, you would think that there'd be that internal editor inside your head saying, stop, wait a minute. This sounds ridiculous, so there's a possibility that it is. Maybe we're not being empathetic enough. You know, maybe we're not making enough of an effort to really understand people who are different from us instead of just dismissing them as a ridiculous caricature. Well, let's just think. Does it seem like liberals are seeking to unite people? Well, let's look at the way they look at people who are different from themselves. I mean, you remember the thing the Washington Post said all those years ago, I don't know, maybe 8, 10, 12 years ago, about evangelical Christians, you know, being easily led and, you know, not that bright and whatever. Well, was that an attempt to unite with them by insulting them like that? And they do stuff like this all the time. They talk this way all the time about, and this was a problem that liberals first faced in a major way during the Vietnam War. I was once reading Ramparts magazine in the library. It was before my time, but they had all the copies of it. And this was a New Left magazine, if I remember correctly. And what I found in there was frustration with the stupid working class. They felt like we're these intellectuals, and the working class should be taking dictation from us and should be following what we say. And instead, these stupid rubes support the Vietnam War. This is exasperating. Now, by the way, if I were in their shoes, I'd feel exactly the same way. But you note that that is a very, very far cry. I mean, they had an absolute superiority complex over the people they were claiming to be trying to save. Absolute superiority complex. That doesn't seem like an attitude that would unite people. Not to mention, I wouldn't even need to go into all the race baiting stuff and encouraging everybody to think of himself first by his race and by injustices real and imagined, and constantly emphasizing that and making sure that people get a distorted view of what's really happening. So make sure nobody knows the real data on interracial crime. Make sure that they understand the liberal narrative, which is that white people just attack black people. But it turns out that when it comes to interracial crime, the exact opposite is the truth. It's overwhelmingly the other way. But nobody knows that, because who the heck is going to bother looking at crime statistics? So is doing this sort of thing, is that designed to unite people by, in effect, misleading them into thinking that something is happening that is not in fact happening? Or how about trying to get people fired from their jobs because they hold dissident views? Or making sure that they get silenced because you disagree with them? Is that a kind of, is that unity that they're trying to bring about? Is that what? Now, I'm not saying conservatives are necessarily trying to unite people. And in terms of libertarianism, we're not really trying to unite people either. I mean, to the extent that I'm trying to unite them, it's to unite them in the shared understanding that we're all getting exploited by the state. That's the extent to which I want to unite people. But otherwise, what I want to do is let people make their own decisions about whether they want to be united or not. Maybe they don't want to hang around with me or agree with my opinions. Okay, that's okay. I'm not a totalitarian. I don't demand that people be like me and call having everybody be like me uniting people. That's creepy. There's no reason that should be something we should aspire to. So I'm not saying that even conservatives or libertarians are trying to unite people. I think the correct approach to this is to say it's a fool's errand to try to unite Americans. What does this even mean? We obviously have radical disagreements on the meaning of life itself. And from that radical disagreement come all these lesser disagreements. We have the gender wars, the pronoun wars, which are about obviously much, much more than pronouns. We have fights over race. We have fights over economic policy. We have fights over climate and whatever, all these other things. All these other things. How do you unite these people? How do you possibly unite these people? It'd be far better to say, instead of this crazy utopian idea that people with such radically different worldviews should aspire to live together and this can work out peacefully, why don't we just say, look, if you have this kind of way of looking at the world, how about you live over there and we'll live over here? And instead of trying to impose ourselves on each other, we'll trade from a distance. You know, I mean, wouldn't that be better? Wouldn't that be more humane and less like control freakish? Then conservatives, it says, fear diversity, and liberals celebrate diversity. Of course, diversity is not defined. What do they mean? Do they just mean people from a lot of different backgrounds living together? Is that what they mean by diversity? Because I bet if I were to trace where most educated liberals live, I would bet that they live in neighborhoods where their neighbors look a lot like themselves. That would be my guess. And I would be willing to guess that educated liberals tend to send their children not to the local school where there are kids who look different from their children, but rather they send their children to the elite private school with a lot of other children who look like theirs. That would be my wild guess. So I think for all this trumpeting of their celebration of diversity, I don't think they really believe it based on the way they act. Because remember the old expression, actions speak louder than words? Well, watch what they do rather than listening to what they say. And in terms of diversity, can you imagine the gaslighting operation that it has taken to persuade Americans that these people who favor the most soul-crushing conformity of any people you've ever met in your life, that these people favor diversity? These people favor the most soul-crushing sameness of any people I've ever heard of in history. These are people who are not satisfied that every last corporate CEO is committed to their priorities and says so repeatedly, and that practically everybody in academia says so, and the ones who don't say so are too terrified to speak out. And everybody in the entertainment world agrees with them. And if one person in the entertainment world says something that's even slightly off message, that person is shunned and smeared and destroyed. And they have that on their side. All this Borg, this collectivist mentality where they all think alike, they all think the same, they all utter the same slogans, the same words, the same priorities, the same issues over and over and over again. While meanwhile, issues of extremely grave importance go completely uncommented on because they're not fashionable. So why would your musician that you like know anything about that or say anything about that? They have all this, and they have the nerve to say that, yeah, we really have to help the marginalized. The marginalized? In what definition, what dictionary is defining marginalized as belonging to a group that is championed by every powerful sector of society? And that when that marginalized group says, we don't like this word or that attitude or this issue or that position or this philosophy, everybody immediately conforms to that. That's marginalized to you? So no, diversity, these are people who would die 1,000 deaths before actually experiencing diversity. What they want are people who think exactly the way they do. They don't care how the people look. Although, as I say, they generally won't send their kids to be with those kids. But they claim they don't care how these people look as long as they say the same things and take dictation from them, because they're the saviors and they know what everybody in society needs. And so you better shut up and parrot that. And we are the champions of diversity. This is incredible to me that anyone for one second could believe that. All right, before I go on to the other 3 points, oh boy, it doesn't get any better, folks. It does not get any better. Let me just say a quick word for something I really like and that I think you guys will too. And it has to do with hydration. Summer's here. It's crazy hot outside. We all know we're supposed to drink more water. By the time you feel thirsty, it's too late. You're already dehydrated. You can't focus. You feel tired. Drinking enough water is critical for a healthy lifestyle. It increases your brain power, makes you more productive, and can prevent headaches. Increase your focus, can do a lot of things for you, help your digestion, give you energy. But how much water should you drink every day? What, 10 cups, a gallon, 8 glasses? The good news is it doesn't have to be so complicated. I've been starting my day with Hydrant, which helps me hydrate faster. It's a refreshing electrolyte powder you mix directly into water. I can just shake it up in a bottle of water, and it more efficiently and effectively hydrates your body, and it keeps you going for longer. Each rapid hydration mix has the 4 essential electrolytes your body needs: sodium, potassium, magnesium, and zinc, and it packs a punch to help your body hydrate fast and stay that way. It's made with real fruit juice powder, delicious and refreshing, comes in a variety of flavors, including new summer-friendly iced tea lemonade, which I love, and fruit punch. I personally go for the blood orange at the beginning of the day. I love it, tastes great, and makes me feel great. But you really need to try it for yourself to see what I'm talking about. It tastes great, and it works. We've got a special deal for our listeners to save 25% off your first order. Go to drinkhydrant.com/woods or enter our promo code WOODS at checkout. That's drinkhydrant.com/woods and enter promo code WOODS for 25% off your first order. drinkhydrant.com/woods and enter promo code WOODS to save 25%. And we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. All right, let's get back to it. The next one is the conservative promotes aggression and the liberal promotes peace. Okay, well, now you get into definitions of what's a real conservative and all that, and that's fruitless, I think. It's worth trying, but ultimately you're just going to argue over definitions all day. So it's true that some people who call themselves conservatives have been pro-war or, you know, the use of a force. But the idea that liberals, by contrast, promote peace is not believable. It's not reasonable. Maybe you could say leftists have, but even even that is an exaggeration. When it comes to liberals, I can find plenty of liberals in the modern sense of the word liberal who favored the Spanish-American War. Virtually all progressives favored U.S. entry into World War I. Absolute disastrous decision. Absolutely disastrous decision. And virtually all progressives favored that. You can count on one hand, Randolph Bourne, Jane Addams, one or two others. You can count on one hand the ones who opposed it. Progressives, along with the social gospel clergy, were all on board for that war. So much for promoting peace. And you could just go on and on and on. I mean, during the Cold War, I know the idea was that the liberals were pro-communist, but the liberals, the standard liberal like Arthur Schlesinger, who wrote speeches for JFK, was always hawkish during the Cold War. The standard liberal was hawkish during the Cold War. And of course, it was liberals who, I mean, yes, there was some early intervention by Eisenhower, but the real escalation in Vietnam occurred under, you know, run-of-the-mill liberals. Then in the 1990s, under Bill Clinton, liberals favored intervention all over the place. In fact, it got to the point where even Sean Hannity, who wanted to bomb everything, had to finally take a position against the Democrats. I guess he figured, well, once in a while, I can be against the Democrats on foreign policy. And in 1999, he was against bombing Serbia, for example. So this is just empirically refuted by actual examples in American history. Then how about this one? The conservative wants to promote ignorance. The liberal wants to promote education. Now, look, I'm going to show my bias here. I personally find so-called educated liberals to be like the most ignorant people I deal with, especially the ones who boast of their education. Oh my gosh, these people don't know anything. And they certainly don't know anything outside their bubble. I can tell you, I can describe the progressive worldview for you and justify it effectively and persuasively. They have no idea what we believe. They've never read anything. All they can say is Ayn Rand this and Ayn Rand that. They're completely ignorant of the views of people other than themselves. And even their own views, I bet you I could defend their own views better than they can because I'm more well-read than they are. Not to mention, it's left liberals who've been in charge of American education for as long as any of us have been alive. On every level, the education bureaucracy at the local, state, and federal level is completely dominated by left liberals and has been forever. Would you say the outcome indicates that they're deeply concerned about education? The outcomes are catastrophically bad. If I wanted to promote ignorance, I wouldn't change this system at all. So much for promoting ignorance versus promoting education. I will say this. I was thinking about this the other day. I know that, like, for example, it's a long story, but I got a homeschool brochure in the mail, and it was a catalog of homeschool items, so books and supplies and things. And there was a section on science, and the subject came up in a conversation I was having, and somebody made a little remark about the science books that you would find in a homeschool catalog, with the idea being that they're probably, you know, not accurate and biblical or whatever, you know, not sophisticated liberalism and so on. So I thought about that, and I thought the two issues that I can think of off the top of my head where there would be some debate that you may find in some Christian-based homeschool science books would involve evolution and the age of the earth. Those are the two that I can think of. And maybe there are others, but as far as I know, these books, you know, they don't teach you that chemical reactions are caused by angels or something. They have, you know, they have the formulas worked out there, and they teach you all the laws of physics. Like, all those things are exactly the same as you'd find in any textbook. So as far as I can see, it's just evolution and the age of the earth. Now, regardless of what anybody's position on evolution and the age of the earth is, it doesn't affect my day-to-day life. My day-to-day life goes on. Whereas the people who pat themselves on the back for being pro-science are going to the beach wearing masks. You know, these are the so-called pro-science people. I don't think anybody has anything to be ashamed of compared to these people. Who we have the most panicked, crazed, irrational bunch of allegedly pro-science people I've ever seen. And unlike the Christian homeschoolers who have their own view of the age of the earth, which has no impact on anyone whatsoever, These people are walking around in white lab coats with clipboards telling us where we can and cannot go. So at least the Christian homeschool person is letting me live my life, whereas the so-called pro-science people are doing everything they can to ruin it and to act as if there are no competing goals, like we want to conquer this virus. Okay, well, how scientific is it to isolate one problem and completely neglect all the other problems you're causing by focusing all your resources on the first problem? What about all the deaths caused all around the world that I talked about in the episode yesterday? Is it scientific, so-called, to just ignore those? So if this is what the so-called pro-science people are like, give me the Christian homeschoolers. Because their most controversial statements about science do not affect me in any way. Because unlike the liberal, they have no particular desire to try to run the world with their clipboards and their PhDs and their superior knowledge and whatever it is they think entitles them to rule you. I don't see that coming from evangelical Christians. Now, I may have my own disagreements with some of those people, but we can have them as normal disagreements. They don't condemn me with magical incantations by calling me this word or that word or accusing me of this ism or that ism. That's just crazy, like witchcraft or something. Like they think that words are supposed to end conversations or resolve things or something like that. It's just a symbol, throwing a word at somebody is supposed to shut them down. I can at least talk to those people. We can have a fruitful discussion because those people actually do believe in diversity. They will talk to people who are different from them. They won't just dismiss you with a word. They'll engage with you. These are people who actually are the things that liberals pretend they are. All right, then finally, the conservative, it says, defend tradition against progress. So there, you can already see they're stacking the deck. Defend tradition on its own. You might think, well, there could be something to be said for that, but against progress. Ooh, right? We know progress is always unambiguously good because anybody who defines the word progress is automatically reliable. And then under liberal, we have promote innovation and progress. Now, this may be an area where libertarians differ from conservatives to some degree. I mean, the typical American conservative obviously is not conserving anything. He doesn't even really understand what he's conserving or why he's conserving it. And he just thinks calling somebody a socialist is going to end a discussion. That's not helpful. And that's not impressive. He doesn't really know his own tradition. He knows it's probably bad that statues are being toppled, but he doesn't really know why. And just like, it's like tradition for its own sake. I find Conservatism Inc. in America today very, very unimpressive. I mean, the fact that when the financial crisis came along of 2008, conservatives were completely unprepared to respond to that because they never talk about the Federal Reserve. So all they could do was say, well, there was some law in 1977 that may have contributed to this. Oh, yeah, that's really persuasive. A law in 1977 is what brought about the financial crisis of 2008. Nice job, conservatives. They've done a terrible job educating their own people about what their tradition means, what it's all about, and how to defend the market economy they supposedly favor. And that's why I got so much media time when my book Meltdown came out. It did really well, New York Times bestseller, talking about the financial crisis. The reason that did very well is partly that there were no conservatives equipped to talk about it. So they all the big conservative names all had me on their shows because they thought finally somebody can defend capitalism here. They didn't know how to do it. So yeah, they're crummy in a lot of ways. But you can understand why there are times when you do want to defend tradition, because there is, in tradition, what you have is the accumulated sum of human knowledge as it's lived in praxis. Now, obviously, tradition is not automatically good or automatically correct. But there is, at least I think up till the Enlightenment, the past was thought to have a presumptive authority, that it could be wrong, but you don't just automatically assume that everything like your parents taught you is wrong, because that would be juvenile and irrational. You don't just automatically assume everything you've inherited from the past is wrong and stupid and backward. Maybe society learned these things through brutal trial and error long before you even existed. So to go up against traditional practice in some area for thousands of years and say, yeah, this is probably all stupid. Let's just chuck this. Well, there are times when that is the right thing to do, of course. The point is that a conservative is making is simply that you have to be very discerning when you do that. Because, as I've made this analogy before, think about a house. There are some walls that are supporting walls, that they are necessary for the house to remain standing. Other walls may exist for cosmetic reasons or for convenience or separate rooms, but there are certain walls that you cannot do without. Now, this the analogy here, of course, is that the supporting walls are traditions that are indispensable to the good functioning of society. And then these other walls are dispensable things that are time-bound and not universal. And those things certainly can be changed. The question is, are you sure you know which is which? And be careful, because it's a lot easier to destroy a house than it is to build one, and it's a lot easier to wreck a civilization than it is to put it back together again. Now, when you say it that way, you think, okay, well, maybe the conservative plays a helpful role to us to make sure that we're not too hasty. You know, that we don't, in our haste, discard something that actually is quite precious and important. So you put it that way, you can at least understand where a conservative is coming from. You know, you can treat the conservative like a human being, you know, and show respect for each other. That I went to the trouble of trying to understand, as somebody who, you know, takes very anti-tradition positions, I took the time to try to understand why you're different from me. And at least I get it. I still don't agree, but at least I understand where you're coming from. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have that instead of these inane presentation like this that summarizes everything in bumper sticker slogans and is designed to make the opponent look as ridiculous and idiotic as possible? I mean, you would look at this list under conservative and say, I don't understand how anyone could be a conservative, because this is all just obviously stupid. So the long and the short of it is, don't do that, right? Be a good Tom Woods Show listener and understand people where they're really coming from. Understand them, talk to them, show respect to them. Doesn't mean you'll get it in return, but you're doing the right thing, and that's its own reward a lot of the time. So I'll have that graphic up if you want to look at it, from which I've been drawing for this episode, at tomwoods.com/1699. Also, if you like and appreciate what I'm doing, make sure and become a supporting listener. I'm doing an event. I'm going to be having a private event with Dave Smith and Eric July just for my supporters. And even then, it's going to have to be, because, you know, we only have so much square footage over here. I'm going to have to figure out a way to keep it manageable. But I'll be drawing from the supporting folks here to be part of that. And if that is a success, it'll be the second time I've done a private event with some of the folks. Then I'll do it on a regular basis, and we'll have a lot of fun, and you'll get to meet some people that you've listened to a lot, or people who are known in our little movement. You get to meet them in an intimate setting, and it's a lot of fun. So that's one of the many, many things you get as a member of the Tom Woods Show elite, as a supporting listener of the Tom Woods Show. So do please, before you forget, head over to supportinglisteners.com, and if you value the show, let me hear from you. It will warm my heart. Thanks very much, everybody. See you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.